Hi, and welcome to episode 96 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars, and joining me this week are the creator of the British superhero webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
The man who walks the talk and talks the walk, it's Tony Esmond.
The most hated man in England.
Yeah. Yep. You are the ubermensch of hate, aren't you?
That's me.
But we love you.
You called me Larry David last week. I quite like that.
Yeah, yeah. You are Larry David. I'll save that for another intro, another time.
Okay.
I mentioned this. I was a bit guilty about kind of unleashing the hordes onto Tony unwittingly.
Don't worry about it. Yeah. A lot of people took notice of it. A lot of people.
Yeah.
Be pleased.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He ruffles feathers like someone who washes birds. Yes. Yeah. Oh, I could have. There's another intro line for you. Oh, well. But it's not just these two degenerates with me this week. We've got another guest. And he's the second member of the Reckless Hero crew to join us to talk comics. Oh, it's getting exciting already, isn't
it? Bert said, didn't he? He said,
yeah.
I'm the best
man. Yeah. He's the best one of the Reckless Hero crew. he's a colourist extraordinaire and also the writer of the badass sci-fi western comic, which is one of our faves, The Last Sheriff. It's Mr. Chris Jenkins.
Hello.
Hey, Chris.
You're Chris.
You all right?
Here's the fake hello, because we've all been speaking for 15 minutes, and there's all of this gold that none of you will ever hear. Because
apart from in the clip show.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Before we actually start, Chris is an absolute legend, because he hasn't long been home, because he's just returned this very day from a weekend at a convention. Now, there seems to be a convention every other minute, doesn't there? But you were actually at MCon this weekend, if I'm correct, with the Reckless crew. So how was that, Chris?
Yeah, it was good, thanks. Yeah, it was. I've done that a few kind of years on the trot now, and it was a generally good event. A bit slower on the Saturday, which is surprising, but the Sunday picked up for us. So that was
that's quite that was unusual, because really, the Sundays are usually the quiet one, aren't they? That you do your shopping.
To be maybe it's thrown out of whack by the bank holiday.
Ah, true.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So what is MCon? What is the purpose of it? What's the M stand for?
East Midlands, I think.
East Midlands.
With a bin in Nottingham. And it's, although it doesn't mention comics comics in the comic convention sort of like title, there was actually some comics there, so that was good.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, there wasn't there was an artist alley, but it was literally an alley though, right, kind of like around the back, which
at the back of the venue where which was also a toilet.
you're joking, but it's because it's at the Motorpoint Arena. So on the actual floor of the arena is all like all the kind of like traders and things like that. And we were down there, but then there's a kind of concourse around the outside.
Right.
So they have like some stalls around there, and one part of that concourse, which was, I say it's an alley, was Artist Alley, and the toilets are actually around there. So you went a million miles away.
I just see it as one of those sort of, you know, when you're walking through the rough bit of town, you've got to go down an alley, and it's full of sort of fake punks carrying flick knives, and you got to walk through, and they as you walk through they give you all dead legs. Sounds a bit like that.
Yeah, dead legs and comics. Yeah
that's it.
That's what you want from a convention, isn't it, really?
Yeah
Who was the names? Did they have any names at it? Comic names at all?
No comic names. And I say, well, it wasn't billed as a comic con, so you can give a little bit of leeway. But the big name was Ginny Weasley from Harry Potter. The rest of them were most of the same people that have been at every other convention.
Keith Allen at it?
Yes, he was actually. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
I saw a picture of him looking incredibly like he was about to attack the cameraman.
Yeah, I think he was just getting bored of being asked questions about Lily Allen. Alfie Allen.
Yeah. I'd have asked him, was he at the pool party?
Which one's that?
Barrymore's.
Was he really?
Was that a bit dark for the show?
That's pretty dark. But that's what we like about you, Dan. You're not afraid to go there.
Nothing's proved against Barrymore either.
I didn't say there was anything bad about it being
legal reasons. Yeah.
I think after every sentence we have to say, allegedly.
Yeah.
Probably just in general these days, just about everything.
Maybe scrub that the show if that was a bit too much.
People seem to take things very seriously. Like when I sort of jokingly said I wanted all cosplayers to die, people actually believed I meant that.
Yeah. Of course he doesn't. He loves them. We all love them here.
I don't.
I do.
I just wish they'd build pockets into their costumes so they could actually buy something.
Very true. Thank you. You're already my favourite guest.
Well,
so it's always an excuse if their gloves can't hold something or they haven't got anywhere to put it. So
yeah, sorry. Look, I'm covered in green paint. Yeah.
Well, if they're covered in green paint, I don't want them touching my books. But
what?
It makes a perfect opportunity to go down to the pub in cosplayed in. Everyone's like, you're around, Dan. Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So basically, whenever Dan's invited out for a night out, he goes dressed as Silver Surfer from now on.
Yeah, yeah.
The stop off at the spa beforehand and get a couple of rolls.
Oh, dear. But no, cosplayers have bought comics from me. I'll just say that there. I'm going to put that out there.
Me too. Yeah.
There. There you go.
It was hard when someone brought up that point about they don't buy the comics in costume, they come back. I guess I wouldn't know. Yeah, you wouldn't know.
Yeah.
They're not cosplayers at that point. Allow me to point that out to you.
You do know, Dan, because they tell you all the time. Oh, you might remember me. I was such and such from yesterday.
Oh. You sound like vegans that come up and...
You sound like they just sort of demand attention. I can't believe that at all.
Yeah. We don't demand attention on this show, do we? Even though we've got a weekly podcast, it's just 2 hours of us talking.
Yeah. Speaking of celebrities, though.
Go on.
I saw Sandy Toksvig this week.
Yeah.
You did?
That was very exciting. And I immediately started texting both of you pictures of her, didn't I?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But there was actually a reason. You weren't just sat in a Costa following her.
Yeah. I thought the ones where you stuck the camera over the top of the cubicle were a bit questionable.
Yeah.
Oh, I love the week where Dan's on form. This is going to be good.
Listen, if you do it to me, I don't mind.
In terms of cubicle shots, do you think it's over the top or underneath the door that are the worst?
Oh, no, you always want to be shooting down on someone. You don't want to be shooting up on them. Do you? You never know.
It's where I live my life. Anyway, where were you this weekend then, Tony?
Thanks for asking, Vince. I was at the Cartoon Museum.
Nice one.
And I was at the Inking Women, which was nice to see. It was actually a comic event about comics, which is really nice. So it included the word comic in the title, and it actually had people talking about comics. It was pretty impressive. Brilliant. Yeah, I was really impressed by that.
They have artwork on the walls and people
talking
about their stuff.
I think it was about 100 artists, so 100 female artists. And there was loads of them there as well, actually. If you look on the Cartoon Museum's Twitter page, there's loads of sort of people gathered together. They took a sort of downshot on all the female creators who were there. I spoke to quite a few. Who did I speak to? I spoke to Rachel Ball, who I pointed out that we were best friends on Facebook and she'd forgotten. And then she pretended to remember and said that she really liked my artwork, which I thought was quite good.
Whoops.
Yep. Jess Kemp, who's doing Miss Deadline, the relaunch of Deadline, if anyone's seen that.
Okay.
Elizabeth Querstritt, who we've talked about before. I spoke about at the end of the year show about her webcomic.
Yeah,
her and I came up, along with Andy Poyagi, who was there, came up with the idea that she should do like an action episode where people just fight each other, which she seemed quite excited by.
Goes down well.
Yeah, I think so. Wallace Eats, who was there, who many moons ago was the answer, she cut her hair off and put it in a comic, was the answer to one of our competitions, if you remember.
Oh yes.
Yeah. I got invited by Simon Russell, our friend of the show, and it was part organised by him, and it was a good night, really, really fun. It was just one of those nights where you just sort of walk from group to group, chatting to lots of people, you know, really good stuff. Richard Chief from Down the Tubes was there, he's a good lad, and I had quite an interesting chat with Alex Fitch, if anyone knows him. He does the Resonance FM comic show. Anyone heard about that one?
No.
No.
Yeah, it's quite a good little podcast. So I had a chat with him. It's still running. You can go to the Cartoon Museum at 35 Little Russell Street near the British Museum, and it's cartoonmuseum.org. Very good indeed.
Brilliant.
Some lovely artwork on the walls, just gorgeous stuff. You know, Posy Simmons, all sorts of people. Really good.
Nice.
Yeah.
Is that open all the time then?
It's sort of office hours. It might close about 6:30, something like that, I think. Yeah. But yeah, I can't remember how much it was. This was a sort of opening, so I managed to blag my way in with Simon. But Yeah, it's worth going to. They're the people who ran the 2000 AD one, which is just finished, which was very good as well. Yeah,
oh, cool. Check that out next time I'm staying.
It's amazing thing. There's so much stuff out there. There's so many comic artists and creators, but you only sort of get to see a certain amount of them. Mm. Even by kind of being on social media, you only get a kind of a glimpse at the number of them. I always find it amazing.
I mean, I'd like to see more sort of comic pages, exhibitions going sort of nationwide, if you know what I mean. I know yeah. London you usually get a lot, but, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of guys probably up in the north who don't get as many. Or,
well, you got to remember, you got the Lakes Festival. There's a lot going on at that. There's a lot goes on at Thought Bubble. Margate have just run the 2000 AD one.
But these things are part of bigger events. You know what I mean?
But then again, do you know what I mean? Most of the main museums are in London, aren't they? I suppose that's where the footfall comes. They are, though, aren't they? You know.
Okay.
I see what people say every week.
The equivalent of the V&A in Bath, do you?
Well,
do you know what I mean?
No, but I'm just saying it'd be nice to have these exhibitions, you know, a bit further afield than London that, you know, someone in Newcastle might not be able to make it to.
I'll back you on that against the Southerners. We're saying it's kind of like the North is, and other areas aren't as heavily invested in as London. So we'll keep on throwing the good stuff in London.
Yeah. Talking about the North, giving a shout out to Chris and Tom. They did
they've done one, haven't they? Yeah.
Yeah, mini Comic Con in their craft bar up in Liverpool, which was, if I was anywhere near that place, I would have gone straight away.
Yeah,
comics and craft beers sounds great.
Comics, beers, and music. There was music playing the whole weekend, wasn't there? So, and they had was it Rosie Hathaway was there?
Roger Clover was there.
Sure. I said that right then.
Was that the one that John Late was going to go to with the? I'm not sure what they call themselves now. Where they're close to immortality.
No, they were at the Birmingham Comics Festival.
Yeah, the Edgbaston one, weren't they?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Wow. Which was also this weekend, wasn't it?
So, yeah.
I think the Maddiest really guys went, didn't they, to the craft?
Oh, did they?
So.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Brilliant.
So, I saw their banner in the background.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be nice
maybe
to
some
see.
Of these, maybe some of these people who live in the North can fucking organise a comic exhibition. That'd be fine, wouldn't it?
Or the South.
Oh, we've got plenty. We're fine.
No, not in this area.
Looking after themselves again.
If you don't live within the walls, you get nothing.
Yeah. Good to see the battle lines being drawn again on the show.
Yeah. North, south. Fuck them.
Oh, there's going to be a very. Soon there's going to be the Awesome Pod Civil War episode, isn't there?
Yeah.
Cage fighting.
Oh, my word. Oh. I'm not going to be on that episode. But we all love each other here. It's all in good fun.
Yes.
So, so many comic events that just seem to be happening around us at the moment.
Yeah, even outside of London. Again, zings.
We said this before, though. If you've got an event you want to promote, do let us know and we'll give it a shout-out, as opposed to kind of actively trying to do it every week. We're happy to give shows a shout out as long as the kind of the primary focus of your show is comics as opposed to any other.
Yeah,
thing.
Exactly. Yeah,
here, Madam Speaker. Yeah, well done.
I've got nothing wrong with those other things. If you want to run, fine. No. But we just want us to focus on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're just all about comics on this show, aren't we?
Yeah.
If we've got a necklace podcast, we can advertise OxCon on it at some point.
Oh. We've already got some spin-offs we're working on. Do not open that can of worms again, Tony.
I think it's sort of like just an hour of a Tony Rants podcast every week. I think that would go down
just
well.
One for the ladies, Chris.
Oh. Oh dear, never know, there might be a special like that. We'll have to work on something like that. That'd be interesting. Anyway, it is the last week of April, as we speak, and we all know what April has been.
You've had enough of the North and the South.
Yeah,
let's talk about.
Yeah. Let's talk about comics again, and let's talk about our genre-tastic month. Woohoo!
Thank fuck, it's the 30th of April.
I must say, we've had a lot of fun talking about a bunch of different sort of topics and genres this month. We've talked about all kinds, but as it's the last week, we're going to be talking about Western comics. Now, we're not talking about, like American or British comics versus the Eastern sort of manga comics. We're talking about cowboys and gunslingers and all kinds.
Yeah.
This week. Like the movies, in the grand scheme of things, you don't see a lot of Western comics these days. I would say it almost mirrors the sort of movie sort of world, doesn't it? Where I don't think it's... That doesn't say that there aren't great books out there, but it's not a genre that necessarily gets as much attention as a lot of others. Certainly not in the UK anyway.
Used to be big though, didn't it?
Mm.
Western comics.
Yeah.
In the day, it started Western comics. Like, that was the staple.
Yeah,
it was, like 1940s, 50s.
You could say that Western comics and crime comics were hand in hand. They were the sort of the big leaders, weren't they? Really, and sort of the pulpy science fiction. And as things have moved on, as soon as superheroes turned up, these pesky superheroes, it's sort of a lot of these other sort of types of comics not faded away, but superheroes have certainly taken over everything.
Is that more though, because they were at the time you're talking 50s, 40s and 50s, they were big. When that's kind of how long ago we kind of are we talking now? Is it what sort of, I don't know, sort of 80, 90 years? So you're talking, is it just like it's more of a history shift? So now you're getting like comics that are kind of like 80, 90 years ago from when we're kind of publishing that. So you're getting like sort of 20s, 30s, you're getting a lot of war comics and stuff like that, more so than Westerns, maybe.
Yeah. It almost, because of that, because like almost it's moved even further, time has moved even further on, as it does, it has a habit of doing that. But the Western sort of genre almost becomes a lot more mythical. It becomes less sort of, realistic. It's like folklore rather than like telling something that you experienced last week. Certainly, I think war comics are certainly more prevalent than Western, don't you think?
I don't know. They kind of, I always feel like the attitude towards war comics has changed so much from the point when it was kind of like the old Commando comics, when it was like, suck on that, you sausage eating scum. So now it's kind of, do you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like reveling in kind of violence against the other side, to what they've become now, which is kind of a lot more of a commentary on it.
Yeah, I think we have to be careful about the sensitivities of people from other countries. I think in both the war comics and in Western comics, I sent you two guys a panel which was pretty outrageous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Earlier, didn't I?
Yeah.
I mean,
which was the Vigilante character, which is an old sort of golden age character, really. I know there's a new version of him now, but with and his sidekick was called Stuff, the Chinatown Kid, who is just like the worst possible cliche of what these people thought at the time was acceptable, And I think with the sort of the indigenous people, were treated quite badly in certain comics, but I mean, that's certainly improved now since the 70s, really, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I imagine a lot of those comics, if you read them now, would be relatively distasteful elements, should I say.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think taken, a sensible person would read them and realise they were of a time.
Yeah.
To a certain extent. I think you've got to accept that, people perhaps weren't as well educated as they are now,
Like that warning before the Tom and Jerry cartoons, when it's like, this is a work of fiction from the time.
And
to kind of retroactively go back through history and edit the bits you don't find tasteful nowadays is just folly. Because if you don't kind of take lessons from history, you're doomed to repeat it. So trying to erase history just to make it seem like, oh, everything was great.
Yeah, that's silly, isn't it?
Silly move.
Yeah. Mm. Do you think those sort of controversial topics and things like that are what put a lot of creators off of working in that genre?
I don't know if they are put off. I mean, I was thinking things when I think of like war, kind of like war comics as a whole, or like war literature. I think a lot of the time, what people do, there will be some like war comics as such. A lot of the time, you take those general themes and then you change the setting, and you see loads of like sort of like sci-fi novels are all based on things like the kind of like the Vietnam War or kind of World War II and things like that. So I think that's the way that a lot of people deal with it. You basically put it in a different universe somewhere, and then you can do what you like. You can have kind of like tyrants and things like that, and it's fine.
How well do you think that sort of thing works with the Western genre, though? I mean, obviously you've worked on The Last Sheriff and yours is a science fiction sort of take on it, but it's still, that book to me still feels like a sort of, it's got those Western sort of roots. It doesn't feel like, you know, it still feels like the Western comics of old in some ways. You know, it's very true to that, to its roots. That makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, so we tried to do it, but I think what we're trying to do is probably go the opposite way of take sort of some more sort of like modern themes that develop as a sort of story arc goes on, but they'll be set in the kind of like this kind of like Wild West world. So shifting things like that around, but using that the kind of like the stylization and the kind of the location of the Wild West to shift that around. So, but I think that's some of the joy of it now. And one of the things I was thinking about when you told me I was doing Westerns was what do we actually mean by kind of like by Westerns? Is it that it's got cowboys in? Is it that it's set in this kind of in the Wild West, or is it that actually more the general themes that are going through this kind of like this lawless period, this kind of like frontier kind of like discovery and things like that we're talking about? Because that maybe doesn't necessarily need to be in the kind of set in this in the kind of like the Wild West have those same themes.
I mean, certainly we've talked about books on here before that could be considered a Western, that, you know, there's not a cowboy in sight. Old Man Logan, that series, that to me feels, it just feels like a Western.
It
totally is. It's such a great book as well. Certainly a lot of crime, you know, crime books sort of straddle that as well. Having, you know, the one of the greatest Westerns, I think, in comics is Preacher. Do you know what I mean? You cannot deny that that's heavily Western. Not just because of where it's set. Because is it Texas through the whole of Preacher?
No, they move, don't they?
Yeah.
It's like it's a road trip essentially. Yeah. So.
But those sort of Western tropes like just go constantly through the whole thing, don't they? I think you're absolutely right. When we said this week was going to be about Westerns, you know. Like listeners out there now, when I say we're going to be talking about Western comics, what was the first thing you thought of? It was probably someone, or Woody from Toy Story, probably. But you do sort of think of the cowboys, don't you? The gunslingers.
Yeah. That's essentially kind of John Wayne Wild West kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, the classic. One thing I want to know, Chris, is, like, The Last Sheriff was the first sort of comic from Reckless Hero that you guys decided to put out. And so what inspired you to do a book that was, you know, touching with that, you know, skirting around that sort of genre that not a lot of people touch? You know, one of the reasons that The Last Sheriff stands out is because you don't see much like it. You don't see anything like it.
No.
What made you decide to go that way?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was one of the reasons, to be honest. I mean, we talked about kind of like a few different ideas, and there was an idea for another book that was a lot more sort of set in the modern world, but it essentially The Last Sheriff was at both of our first kind of undertakings as writers and artists. It was too big for us. It was going to be kind of like probably a sort of like 7-trade arc or something like that, and it was just like, this is ridiculous. We're not even done this before, and we're jumping into sort of a 7-trade arc. That's bonkers. And that was one of the best decisions we made. And we were just chatting around characters, and we'd done a kind of futuristic looking cowboy in one of the t-shirt designs that we'd done at the time. And we were just kind of chatting around ideas, or what would that kind of like that character be? Who is he? What's his kind of like backstory and things like that? And that's it just kind of evolved quite naturally from there. And when we were sort of like talking about it was actually that's quite cool. You don't see very many kind of Western comics, or maybe there's either you kind of we probably should have thought, well, maybe there's actually not a market for it. We didn't, because we're not clever like that. We thought, oh, there's a gap in the market there. So,
though, isn't it? Rather than think, here's a way to make money, you just wanted to tell this story, you know, and that's how the best stories get told, don't they? You know, you've got a story that you want to tell, and the quality shines through.
Yeah, so we set it up, and we tried to do the first issue as it stands alone as a as a kind of like a short kind of like story in itself, but also kind of like it's got enough it sort of suggests enough of a world that it can lead on to more things if it's well received, because what we didn't want to do with it was do something and then get told, God, the writing's dreadful and the illustration looks like an 8-year-old's done it, and then the kind of like the colouring looks like kind of someone sort of Facebooked a clown or something like that. So do you know what I mean? It's kind of, you get that feedback, you're gonna be like, oh, we should maybe go back to the kind of drawing board a little bit. But luckily, it was generally kind of like quite well received. So we're sort of now we can actually kind of get into really developing the world.
Nice one, because nice. The Reckless Heroes are doing it's doing really well. I mean, you recently had Brian Vander doing work on Operation Boom.
Yeah,
is he drew issue 2?
He drew half of issue 2 and done a brilliant job on it. So big thanks to Vander on that. It was really, really, really good. And worked to kind of like all the sort of like the timescales that we set and everything, which was brilliant. Because he's like everyone else, kind of doing it around a day job and just doing it for the love of it. So, but yeah, his stuff was excellent. So go and sort of check that out if you can. I think we've got it up on sort of Comixology and RecklessHero.com and things like that. If people do want to sort of check it out, I think we've posted some of the kind of pages that Vander's done online as well, so check it there. But yeah, it's really, really good artwork, and check him out. Is it Vander Chi 11 or something like that?
I believe so on Twitter.
Check him out.
He often posts up stuff on there, so yeah, it's a Twitter account well worth following.
Yeah.
One of the things was you're looking to bring on more artists or an artist on Reckless Heroes, and one of the kind of you got a quite a house style, and it must be difficult to get not only someone who can do the house style, but also someone who's reliable as a small pressed artist. And that's quite an ask, because I've seem to have come across a lot of people who kind of say, yeah, I'll do a comic, I can do this and that, and then weeks and weeks, months go by and they produce nothing. And I drove this into someone else before at a con. They were talking about doing a comic issue, and I said, look, it's a lot of work, a hell of a lot of work, on top of your full-time job or whatever you're doing, and don't take it on like just willy-nilly. And they took it on, and then they fucked it up, because they didn't really sort of, I don't know how to stress how hard work it is.
Moral of the story is you should always listen to Dan Butcher.
Yeah, on most things. Not everything.
It's true. I mean, it's you don't realise until you actually kind of like, until you start doing it, how hard it is. And I think the biggest difficulty for new artists is that confidence, to be honest, I think they just kind of like, you try and you don't know where to start almost with it when you're first doing it, and it kind of it stops you from doing anything, and that seems to be a real issue. But you're right, kind of finding kind of like someone to sort of suit our style is something we look for, and it's something we're looking for on sort of like different books. But it's more about, I think one of the things we want to sort of set out as Reckless Heroes is more about just having good artwork. It wasn't particularly like, this is going to be our set style, and unless you draw like that, we're not interested. It was when we were lucky with Vander, it was a sort of similar style that it worked quite well with Chris's. But if we've got another a book, and we've got one that's more sort of like horror themed, and that will be a kind of like a very kind of different style around that, because having the more kind of Eastern kind of inspired, or kind of sort of like a 90s kind of X-Men kind of inspired artwork on something like that wouldn't really work very well. Trying to find artists is very difficult. If you've got any answers for that, then yeah, share them, please.
how have you found, because you literally started with Last Sheriff 1, was that issue 1 experience from the beginning?
Writing, I found relatively easy as a whole. He says that, and now if I kind of go and read back, I'd probably cringe at my own writing and things like that. But yeah, writing wasn't, I didn't find it too hard. I know Chris found the kind of like the drawing kind of sort of difficult, and the colouring the same, because but mostly before we'd done pinup work, which is kind of very, very different, particularly from a colorist point of view. It's very, very, very tricky because you're mainly trying to make that character stand out and be sort of central and just pop from the page. Whereas when you kind of come to a comic, it's completely different. You're trying to get kind of like scenes to work as a whole. You're trying to get certain aspects of it to be in focus and others to not. You're looking for kind of atmosphere and things like that. And it's there's a lot of things to kind of take into consideration as a new colorist. It's all very hard to do, as well as all the technical aspects of it, as things like kind of getting sort of like all the files ready for like the kind of like for printing and things like that. We did the lettering ourselves. That's all a new learning experience. So it's a big undertaking. Like Dan said, it's kind of like when you get new people, they don't realize kind of like just how much they are undertaking. And we didn't, and we should have done kind of probably more research when you're first setting out. And that's the thing that I would recommend to anyone: just do as much research as you can, speak to as many people as you can, go around these conventions and speak to the people who are doing it, because a lot of them will give you their time. They're probably bored at the conventions, so they're happy just to speak to someone most of the time. speak to people, and it will, it's well worth it, because it will probably save a lot of hassle.
To not give anything away, Tony, you've been in talks with an artist recently, and how did you find that process of getting them on board without kind of spoiling it?
Yeah, fine, mate. Yeah, I mean, he came to me. So,
oh, okay.
He asked me what I had going, because I'd mentioned something on here, only like a little aside. And he was up for it. So I just sent him the script, and he liked it, and then we sort of got cracking from them. To be fair, we haven't done any sequentials yet. We're just doing sort of characters. Okay. Not too bad. Well, it's early days, but you know.
I guess when you know artists and you know their output, that's a lot better than kind of hiring someone blind.
Yeah.
Because
when it's no secret. I mean, it's Nick Prolick, so we love his work anyway. He's really good. I think it wasn't exactly the style I had in mind, but when I think about it, it's like perfect for the story. So it's early days. It's only been a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm
very excited to see how that turns out.
I mean, the amount of people, as a writer, the amount of people you send out scripts to, you know, and they just never get done. You never hear back again. You know, I think that's quite a common thing, especially in the small press world.
Yeah.
When you write a script. And then some people even say, can I have a look at it? I really want to do this. And you send it out and then it doesn't get done. You know, it is a little bit painful around that sort of thing. I don't know if you find that, Chris.
We've had stuff that scripts and stuff we sent to artists, and we've never really had kind of like much back from them. And you're just waiting, and we try to run this kind of like a business. So you kind of like you are planning out. Oh, we'll do the kind of the drawing here. We're kind of planning the colouring here, and then we'll send sort of like to print here and publish it at such and such a date. And that's what you're planning on. And then things just kind of like just fall away, and it's a bit disappointing because we want to be kind of quite active what we're producing rather than people having to wait every kind of 6 months for a new issue of it, or more than that. So
I think the difference has come in where the small press world now is something that people get paid for doing artwork. Where when I used to do it in the 90s and early 2000s, it was you did it with your mate, and you probably didn't make any money out of it, to be fair, but you did it for a laugh, you know.
Yeah.
But I think now the expectation is that you get paid for a page.
Mm. Yeah.
I think generally.
Yeah. To be fair, like if he was going in, not,
you know,
like for a gentleman's agreement, as it were, to kind of like, right, I'm going to write it, you're going to do the art, and we're going to kind of split it 50-50 or whatever kind of way you're going to do about it. I'm sure there's plenty of those agreements going on.
There are those people who do that, but then again, the problem you've got with that is those people will fall away when they get offered a paid job by someone else.
Yeah, there's that.
I think that's quite a common thing these days. And there's, I think, like we've talked about before, and I know that I chatted to Ken Reynolds about it, there's a contract element that's now coming into it. I know he sends contracts out on his, on Sliced, you know? And it's something that, whilst I'm not, because I get on very well with Nick and we're mates, I'm not writing him a contract, but I'm certainly sending him an email saying, this is where I was going. What do you think? You know, and it's not an agreement, but it's a discussion that we've had, you know,
about
rates and where it will be printed and who will get ownership of it. And, you know, there's that sort of element. So you've got to do it. You know, you've got to do this now, I think.
There is occasionally a horror story that comes along of like this kind of thing happening where two parties have fallen out and there's no kind of contract been signed whatsoever.
Yeah.
And there's just tons, not only money, but just the time that's been poured into this work, a dual effort, and it's just gone up in smoke. And I mean, what happened with the Slice one was it's particularly bad because it was like retroactive over three comics. I think it was two or three comics.
Right.
With material having to be removed because of an artist doing something.
Yeah.
But, there's certainly stuff like where people have taken payment and then not delivered the goods at all.
I mean, there's a lot of snowflakes out there these days, aren't there? There's a lot of people who will, you know, kick off and cry about stuff. You know, I think if you're not happy with something, you need that basis to go back and say, look, this is what we kind of talked about, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I think you really need that now.
Yeah.
Has the world changed with kind of paying artists are actually being expected to pay now with things like Kickstarter? Because are artists expecting, thinking, well, just build my fees into Kickstarter when you run that?
Yeah, I think that's certainly a discussion that's being had. I think the problem is because, you know, there's a lot of flakes out there. Even if you do offer to pay them, it still don't get done sometimes either, you know?
What would be difficult is, like, say you started a Kickstarter, you're the writer, right? Okay, we've got $1,000 to make this comic. The artist wants 500 quid to do the comic. And then the Kickstarter's done and dusty, you've got everyone's money, and then they fuck off and you're left high and dry.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, that's a very difficult situation.
Yeah, I mean, who genuinely goes to small claims court these days? I know everyone goes, oh, you can take them to small claims court. Does anyone know where the small claims court is? I would suggest probably nobody who says that knows where it is. You know, these things never get sort of followed up on.
What you're going to court, what you'd be going to go court over is like such a fucking massive ball ache over.
Yeah,
what?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I just feel like if you had the contract, it's a little bit like, this is serious and you're making a commitment here, not just, oh, yeah, I'll do your comic.
I think the situation with a writer is different as well. But if you're a writer-artist, like you and Vince are, then it's easier because you can just do your own stuff, can't you? Necessarily, just if you want to, you can go and do that. Yeah. But I think as a writer, I mean, I've certainly got five, six, seven scripts out there sitting with people. And you got to the point now where it's just grief to follow it up. People are so spiky with their feelings these days. If you said, oh, get on with that story, it'd never get done. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's a funny one.
We've had kind of like contracts before with people, and one of the things I think I'd maybe put into future ones is some sort of like either bonus or punishment, sort of like kind of like payment of around actually getting it done on time, to emphasize how important that actually is for the business, and maybe get that drive around that. So this is your set kind of like page rate, but you get it all done on time. There's a sort of like lump sum bonus on the end for getting that done.
Interesting, yeah.
Just something I like to consider. I've not tried it yet, so I'll let you know how disastrously it works when it happens.
When I've done comic work and freelance work, they sort of say to the client, right, when do you want this? When did this have to be done by? If they say like it's 2 weeks Friday, or they give you a specific date, that's when the job's done by. There's no fucking around with that date. That's when the work's handed over by then. So I feel like if you kind of talk to an artist and you negotiate and say, look, we need this comic in print by X date and we need the artwork from you by 1 week before, that should be an absolute set in stone deadline. And if you did work professionally, there is no way around that.
Yeah, I think the artists that do work like professionally though are probably the ones that actually get it done on time. Rather than, I think there's probably lots of very talented artists out there that are the kind of probably the ones that are a bit flaky with their timescales and things like that.
Yeah,
I mean you've only got to look at this. I mean, we won't name any names, but there's been a situation recently, isn't there, where someone has asked about someone's working with an artist and another creator has asked about them and if they can have their contact details. Now there's very much two sides to that argument. If you're in the middle of a comic with them and that person is going to offer them more money, then what's going on there? You know, there's also it's not your right to withhold someone's email address, really.
Yeah.
You know, I think we've got to be so careful. Most things are done on sort of, you know, well wishes and good feelings, aren't they, these days?
Yeah.
I had a bit of sympathy with that, to be honest. I think they've got a guy who's doing it, got a bit of backlash, but I had a bit of sympathy because there's an element of, I looked at it as kind of like the R&D kind of like budget, and actually kind of like how many artists do you have to pay and to give work to to find the good one. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's someone just kind of like comes along and says, oh, you've got a good one there that's delivered. Sort of like, what's his details? What do I have, like? How can I get him?
Yeah, exactly. Thing?
And yeah, so I had a bit of sort of like sympathy there, but
I can see both sides of that.
I think
there's two sides to it. It wasn't quite as cut and dried eyesore as some people thought it was. Yeah,
I think also you factor in the how much, for instance, we're talking about artists that are hired for work. Do you know what I mean? You've got your project, it's wonderful, and you hire an artist for it. Whereas there's a lot of projects out there where a writer and an artist have come together and co-created something. I think and co-own it. Sometimes with that, would you say that the artist is less likely to walk away from it because they do have a certain amount of ownership and pride in it?
I think it depends on the personalities and the dynamic of the two people or the three or four people who are doing it, sometimes. Yeah. I think a lot of people are spiky, aren't they? A lot of people are lazy. There's all sorts of elements, I think, to it.
I'm spiky and lazy. There you go.
Oh, yeah. Like a hedgehog.
I did that comic retake before I did Vanguard, and essentially I did it just to kind of get my skills better. Yeah. And I sort of said to the writer of that, I just don't want... You do what you want with this. I've done what I wanted to do with it, and if you want to take it on further and do whatever, it's totally in your boat. I'm not interested in... If you want to make a load of comics, make a load of money and do that, that's fine. I don't really want any comeback from it. A mention would be fine. I'm not sure of many other people there, but it's just kind of, I just want to wash my hands of it. I'm doing my thing now, and...
I think sometimes things are revealed that you don't expect at the start. I did a project with someone, and sort of a year into it, literally, it was revealed that he wanted to sort of monetize it, and I didn't realize that was the plan. So I said, look, it's not really my thing. I'm not really into making money out of this. So, best wishes, I'm off. As I was only the writer, he continued on. I think there's that element sometimes.
I think
it's more difficult to back out if you're the artist,
Communication. Is the primary thing. Communicate. If you're kind of feeling something or thinking something, air it, because otherwise you kind of boil away and end up as a...
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I said to Nick the other day, he said, what sort of thing were you thinking about it? And I sort of laid out the plan for it. And he's like, oh, that's good, like that. So we're straight about it. It's there. It's not necessarily as a contract, just as this is the sort of idea behind it.
Yeah.
I want to make this comic so it gets picked up as a film, is one thing, or I want to make this comic so we can sell it at conventions is another.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I dropped a hell of a lot of knowledge there, didn't we?
Yeah.
Or just vague opinion.
Yeah. That's all this show is.
Right, I've written a list of Western comics. Should we go back to Western again?
Go for it. Yes.
Yes. Right, go for
okay.
it.
Good. Okay. Right. Let's see if any of you have read these.
Oh, here we go. Right. This is when he makes us all look stupid.
No. First one's an easy one.
Yeah.
First one's an easy one. Blueberry.
No.
Anyone?
No.
Really? Do we know who Blueberry is?
No.
Oh, come on.
Is he one of the Munch Bunch?
Yeah. He's
was he in Young Guns?
Yes. He was the Lou Diamond Phillips character in Young Guns. Yeah. He was written by... I'm going to give you some clues then. He was written by Jean-Michel Charlier, created by, and an artist who goes by another name. He's got two names and he's a Frenchman. Where are we getting on?
No. I'm gonna fold. I'm gonna step away from the table and let these two carry on.
Okay, he's been going since 1963. You will know this. You will know the artist on this. He's done quite a lot of design work for films. He's French. There's been a couple of movies made of it. Jean Girard, otherwise Mebius.
Oh, of course.
Right. Yeah. Fucking Whoops. Amazing. Fucking amazing. And this is heading towards the fact that I'm claiming that probably the French and Belgians do Western comics better than the Americans do, which I think is maybe possibly a good shout. What do you think?
Yeah, I honestly, my knowledge on this subject is quite lacking. But he's a fantastic artist, and I can imagine he put
incredible stuff.
Yeah. Most people to shame on whatever genre.
Yeah, what
year did that come out?
63 started. I mean, they've had a few more artists, obviously, since he passed away. You've had some other artists. You've had Michel Rouge and Michel Blanc Dumont, I think his name is, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know why they both called Michel and then a colour. I'm not really sure what that is.
Yeah.
Originally in Fort Navajo, the series, and then spun off into a number of other series. There's La Jeune de Blueberry, which is my pronunciation of Young Blueberry. And Marshall Blueberry as well, with two of the comics that span out of it. But just absolutely the most beautiful sort of Western comic you could possibly think of.
Yeah, just look at the artwork. It does look amazing.
Mm. Oh,
but this is one of those things that the Western genre, we can honestly say it's a niche genre. Certainly for a lot of the UK comics fans, it won't necessarily be for them, or that they don't read many. And then you put in European comics into that, and you're making it even more niche. Which
This is where I was going with it. So the other two I was going to say was Lucky Luke.
Oh yeah, yeah.
still going, which is, I think Sydney Book are putting out like 60 odd volumes.
Yeah.
Still going from 1946. Still,
but,
like,
but in France and stuff, that is just enormous, isn't it?
Yeah, still enormous. You know, still like crazy, you know. And then Tex. Has anyone heard of Tex?
Yeah.
T-E-X. Yeah. Now, I bought, you know, when you get, if you go to another country, do you ever buy like foreign language comics?
Just done that,
a bit of flavour of it, really, don't you? You know. I know you have recently, Vince, haven't you? You bought, and this one I bought in an airport in Portugal. You know, so it's a bit like The Phantom and Dylan Dog and a few of these others, Danger Diabolique. You don't really see them in America or the UK, do you? But you go in every new seaside newsagents or, you know, and you'll see Tex for sale.
Yeah.
Just incredible stuff. They've had, over its long history, it's had some just absolutely brilliant artists in it. Jordi Bonet, Jesus Blasco, Joe Kubert, Goran Parlov, who we're a fan of, aren't we?
Yeah.
Jose Ortiz, you know, just some incredible stuff. But it's been going, first appeared in September 1948 and still going now. I put a screenshot of the movie Tex and the Lords of the Deep, which is a fucking terrible spaghetti western. but it's a movie about it. And these sell bundles, these books, you know, really do. Okay, so getting a bit more sort of nearer our country, I would say probably for me, my favourite Western. Who would you say your favourite Western character is?
What in
out
comics?
Of all films and comics?
In comics, what? Let's say comics, yeah.
Oh.
Well, mine is going to be tied into a book of going to be recommending later on, and that's Roland out of the Dark Tower books.
Yes.
He's a quintessential sort of gunslinger, the gunslinger.
Most of the, I mean, certainly some of the books that I'll talk about in a bit, they're more sort of ensemble pieces, I guess.
Right.
But going back, I would probably say Jesse Custer's one of.
Okay.
He's not a straight up cowboy, of course, but certainly he's got Western through and through, hasn't he? Running in his blood.
Yeah. And you got the John Wayne character appearing, haven't you, and all that sort of thing.
Saint of Killers is an absolute fucking badass.
Yeah. What about you, Chris?
My favourite's the sheriff because I.
I know
him inside out, and which is cheating a bit. I mean, to be honest, my comic around that is East of West. I don't know if you guys have.
That's good. Yeah, I was going to bring that up in a minute. Yeah, very good.
I've already jumped in there.
Yeah, and that's
that death.
Exactly. Yeah, death of the main character as a cowboy. So that's quite an interesting take really on on the Western genre as a whole, and the fact is it's actually a futuristic book but still set in that Wild West environment.
I think part of the publicity was that it was a futuristic Western, wasn't it? I think they went straight for that, didn't they? For me, I'm going to say Jonah Hex.
I knew you were going to say
I just think he's just I read him regularly whenever they bring a comic out, and I have historically read his stuff. I mean, I think he just tells these sort of really good, sort of quite often shortish, apart from the New 52 stuff, sort of almost like little sort of morality tales, you know?
Yeah.
Really good stuff. So appeared 1972, first appearance All-Star Western 10, which then became Weird Western Tales, which is a freaky book.
Yeah. In terms of, what do you reckon was the best sort of era of Jonah Hex stuff?
For me, it was when you had Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti writing it, and you had a sort of a different.
Was that the New 52? No, that was just before the New 52.
Just before New 52, yeah. So they had a sort of spinning roster of artists on it.
Yeah.
So you had J.H. Williams, Darwin Cook, Tony DeZuniga came back, who was one of the originators of him. You had Paul Glacy did some. Just incredible, just sort of short stories, but just like really. They were like compact stories, like you used to get in, you know, before these sort of decompression sort of took over.
Yeah.
There were these sort of good stories that, you know, introduced, had action and had a finish within one or two issues often, you know.
What was the angle on Jonah Hex again? Was he a Confederate soldier or a Northern soldier?
He was Confederate. Remember. Yeah, Confederate soldier.
And he gets his face burnt by?
I think by some indigenous people, as I remember. I think that's right, isn't it? Yeah, I think that's what happened.
I never saw the film. I know you're a big fan.
I've not made it through the film. I'm a big fan of Jonah Hex, but I've never made it through the film. He's in he's been in Legends of Tomorrow, isn't he, a couple of times recently.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's... as well.
Oh, nice one.
His face was designed after Tony DeZuniga saw a doctor's chart in a doctor's. He only sort of cross sections of people's bodies. That's what he designed it for. I'd have to say my other favourite bit of Hex was when you had Tim Truman doing it. And they went the way of sort of horror, the horror western, which is a thing that comes backwards and forwards, isn't it? A little bit.
Yeah.
You had Two Gun Mojo, Riders on the Worm and such, and Shadows West, where he meets Buffalo Bill's Travelling Wild West show, which is just fucking freaky. Just really freaky stuff, you know? Yeah. And then, of course, they sent him into the future at one point. Didn't he ever read that series?
No, that was post 52, wasn't it? If I remember.
No, that was bronze, or the end of the Bronze Age, I suppose. Right, Oh no! I'll tell you what, yeah, it probably was, because his series got cancelled after Crisis.
Yeah.
And then he got transported into sort of a Mad Max future, and it was just called X, and it was all a bit strange. But he's kind of like been there, isn't he? Has he got an ongoing at the moment? I don't think he has, is he?
Not that I know of. But then again, maybe when you're talking on the big scheme of things, normally when you read modern Western comics, and if they're done really well, they're always critically acclaimed, but the sales won't necessarily be there. Do you know what I mean? The big publishers behind DC will just, it doesn't matter how many of us love it, they'll just look at the numbers and just go, buying Western comics, stop it.
You've only got Omega Men, you know, that they pushed that until 12 issues, even though it was selling nothing, but you know, I think they did well, just I think DC went, was really good. Yeah. We'll give you like two more issues or something, you know.
Is the audience actually there for kind of like westerns as a whole? Because it's the same in the kind of in the film world as sort of generally looking.
Yeah,
sort of like some of the biggest bombs in history, things like Wild Wild West and
I think it's like any story, isn't it? I think if they're mass produced, most of them won't be that good. No. But you get the single fantastic story, a good story told well, and will work in no matter what genre. You know, I mean, for instance, they can say, you know, Westerns don't make loads of money. I reckon probably The Hateful Eight made a fair bit of money. I know, probably due to its filmmakers and stuff, but that's...
You can look at Westworld and Deadwood.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Deadwood, one of my favourite TV shows of all time.
Yeah, with you there.
Although it was cancelled due to ratings, wasn't it, Deadwood?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But because it's a cult following, they're making a film of it.
Well,
they've been making a film of it for the past 5 years, haven't they?
Yeah, that's the problem. I heard Ian McShane I think he was on The Nerdist a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying, well, I think someone keeps starting that rumour to get it going again.
Yeah.
And there's another one of those script handed in at studio rumours going around. It was an incredible series. Probably, I have to say, the high point of television for me, genuinely.
Yeah.
You know, best thing I've seen on television for
it's
many
good
years.
They can kind of write that kind of edgy stuff to get on screen. And they talk about like the television. Well, television is so much stronger at the moment than the cinema is for me. I find most films at the cinema are homogenized pieces of crap.
Yeah,
don't hold back.
Absolutely no chances. And when they sort of look back at times of the '80s and the films they're producing and just doing whatever very interesting experimental stuff most of the time. And then now it just seems to be all tick boxes and how much money you're going to get back out of it.
It's the money it's taken over.
Where you start, like films like The Void we've mentioned, and something like that comes along. It's not perfect, but at least the filmmakers are trying something different, something new and something inventive.
There's a passion for it, and they want it to be good. Do you know what I mean? It's not done for a buck, is it? It's just sort of like done through passion. Back to Westerns, I think, on the grand scheme of things, I don't think there's a massive market for it. But the people that follow, for instance, Western comics, like one of my favourite ones is The Sixth Gun, you know.
Yeah.
And that's Only Press, isn't it? I'm just looking at my collective volumes. Yeah, Only Press.
I think Dave Stokes has done some work on that, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Dave Stokes worked with Norton on it, didn't he?
Cool. Yeah. Mm. And I tell you what, it's one of my favourite books. I got the first two hardcover deluxe editions, oversized. It's beautiful stuff, filled with extra goodies and things. And Cullen Bunn and Brian Hurt, I mean, Brian Hurt's work on it is just ridiculous. Obviously, those two worked together on The Damned, which is a book I've talked about in the past. But The Sixth Gun, just, I don't know, seeing that with those oversized pages, it really gave me an appreciation of like seeing a comic page just blown up a bit more. Does that make sense?
Mm. Is that finished now? Yes, isn't it?
The Sixth Gun. I think it's just coming to its end. I think there's a third, because I haven't got the individual sort of hardcovers. I was waiting for these big oversized sort of volumes.
Right.
And the third one's going to be out very soon, or it's just
because it was about a couple of years ago. I heard it was going to be a TV series, but I haven't heard anything else.
They
recently.
made a pilot that was never picked up.
Oh, did they? Okay.
But I think if someone like you had Netflix or HBO do a series like this, I think it was more of a major network that they did it for.
Yeah.
Whereas I think if you did 12 episode sort of season, Sixth Gun's just such a good story, but it's supernatural westerns, which I know, like you were saying, Tony, that there's that sort of horror western which has become more of a thing.
Yeah.
Bringing the supernatural into it, and certainly the Sixth Gun, and another one of my favourite books is The Guns of Shadow Valley, which is a proper old school sort of western with supernatural.
So this is the historic, quite an oldish webcomic, isn't
it?
From a few years ago they collected. Yeah.
Yeah. It's Dave Wachter and James Andrew Clark and Thomas Maurer. They're the three. I've got a lovely collected edition of it. Of course, they're webcomics. You can check it out whenever you want.
There's one big webcomic success story with involving westerns, and that was Cowboys and Aliens.
Yeah, I've never made it through that movie either, to be fair.
That started off as a webcomic on Drunk Duck.
It was a webcomic, was it? Oh, okay. Right.
Which is like a free-to-read site, and then that did so well. I can remember reading it, and then I wasn't a fan of the comic, but there was like news on the front page, and I went to it, and they said like it's been like optioned for a film, and I was like, wow, okay, that's pretty amazing. And then there we go.
Yeah, I've never finished that film either.
No. Yeah. Okay, here's another pop quiz. What Marvel character that has had two movies was a Western character originally?
Oh god. Yes, I know.
Go on.
Ghost Rider.
Well done, yeah. So originally Ghost Rider was a Western character, wasn't he?
Yeah.
They later renamed him Phantom Rider, didn't they?
But I think Ghost Rider wasn't a Marvel property to begin with. I know, because when I was looking up, I was Googling funny old Western comics. A Ghost Rider issue popped up, but it wasn't Marvel. I think it...
Oh, maybe it was a different property then, because I know I thought Roy Thomas created it. Got a feeling. We'll have to have a look at this up, won't we, afterwards or something. But, okay. And I think, it's a while since I've seen the Ghost Rider movies, but doesn't the Western character appear in it?
It does. Sam Elliott is the one of the first ones, and he's riding the horse.
That's right, yeah.
I quite like the fact that it's the mantle that you pass on.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, definitely. And that's they're playing on that quite a lot in the comics at the moment, aren't they? With the car, and now in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and all that sort of thing, yeah.
Well, they do it with pretty much every bloody hero in comics at the moment, don't they? Every major hero is just passing the buck to someone else, and then it's not selling, and they blame it on something else.
Let's go back to something else. Yeah. The here's another one. Which character during the noughties became a gay cowboy?
I know that as well. Yep. That's the Rawhide Kid.
Very good. Yeah, so the Rawhide Kid's been about since the '50s.
Yeah.
And there was a sort of perceived controversy, wasn't there, when he had a miniseries called Slap Leather. I don't know what they thought was going on there with that title.
It's my kind of book.
Would you consider Zorro a Western?
Yes, I'm going on to Zorro in a minute. Yes, one I've got in front of me, Zorro. I think so.
Some of it's set in Spain, isn't it? And but then some of it's set in like Los Angeles or sort of
Mexico. Okay. What makes me laugh about, just quickly, about that Rawhide Kid thing is written by Ron Zimmerman, but it's actually drawn by John Severin, who is a proper sort of old school Marvelized, and he was willing to go there. So all these fanboys were kicking off that Rawhide Kid isn't gay, needs to grow up a bit, I suppose.
He kind of looked like Archie, but in like dark leather chaps, didn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, he looked like a comic book cowboy because, he didn't look sort of like realistic, did he? It was like dark leather and.
Yeah.
When I say it like that, it makes it sound like he's one of the village
people.
Sounded
a bit breathless, Sam.
I was just thinking about it. And, give me a moment.
I always wonder about like the kind of the fashion of the times, because sometimes you see like the way some cowboys are drawn or illustrated, or even on film and TV. And if would they really be walking around looking like that? Because I was reading up on like the holster when you got it on your hip, that used to be known as a sissy holster. No one used to wear them because it's just ridiculous. It's like kind of wearing a bum bag.
Right. Is that not good wearing a bum bag?
It went out a little time ago. Yeah.
But Tony's got to reevaluate his life.
Fanny pack.
That's what I used to have, like a kind of like a under the shoulder or under the armpit kind of thing. I don't know.
Under the shoulder boulder holders. Well, that's what they're called.
Yeah. Yeah. So they were.
Did everyone walk around carrying a piece? Is that the way it was done?
I don't know. Actually, I'd like to know. Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of like to think that people were a bit dirtier looking and, like, you know, they weren't commonly having baths, were they? And their clothes were a bit shit looking and, you know.
Yeah. It wasn't really a clean time, was it?
No. Yeah. Yeah, you wouldn't get away as the Lone Ranger, would you, wearing all that sort of those bright colours? It'd look a bit dirty, wouldn't it?
Some of the. I watched The Gunfighter the other day with Gregory Peck, which is fantastic.
Oh, that's a great film, yeah.
And, like, there's some kind of like bar loafers there, and they've been in the bar for 3 days. Three days. Not going home. Just obviously just drinking and sleeping on the table. That's kind of okay.
But in Westerns, like the old Westerns, they never drank anything but like from little shot glasses, didn't they? No one ever had anything else other than just like the little shot glasses of brandy or whiskey or whatever. You never see them drink anything else.
Yeah, it's cleaner the water, I presume, at the time.
Yeah, it's cleaner. That is the case. I mean,
but what I'm saying is there any other alcohol as well?
Were they brewing beer?
The only time...
Was there a local vineyard?
Yeah.
They have a microbrewery going on the
back. Can I have a bottle of the house red, please? Well, I guess... Oh, Django Unchained, he poured a pint of beer, didn't he?
Yeah.
Did he? Right, okay.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think the only thing that would kind of, when you're working on comics or fiction in any period set in the past, you've got to do your homework big time. I think
you should do all your research, and, you know, just so you have all the knowledge, and then you can, if you choose to sort of, you know, things won't work for the story, then that's your prerogative.
Yeah. But like when you do like The Last Sheriff, and it's a Western, but you set like in the future,
like,
and yeah, exactly. You can use all the tropes, but you've not got the baggage of having to be historically accurate.
Yeah, no, that's exactly why we did it, to be honest. Because, you know, trying to research every other detail and kind of and being called out by sort of like people when you've not accurately kind of like portrayed the way someone sort of like hangs a jacket or something like that, it just isn't worth it. It's not interesting, to be honest. Yeah, the fact you can use all the kind of like the cool elements of the Wild West, but introduce more modern elements as well, if you so choose, is much more interesting as a writer for me.
Yeah, I mean, they were grim times, weren't they?
Yeah.
Have any of you read Loveless, which is a Vertigo book from about 10 years ago?
No.
By Nazzarello. He did it about the same time he was doing 100 Bullets. Hmm. Fuck me, that is nasty. That's a horrible, nasty book. Oh my god.
That doesn't seem like the sort of work Azzarello would do.
Yeah. It's quite a lot of sexual offences in it and all this sort of thing. God. You know, it's dirty. Yeah. I actually stopped reading these three trades. I stopped halfway through the third trade and I thought, it's just too depressing.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Talk about depressing. You bought the Neonomicon, didn't you, Vince?
I did.
Yeah.
From a charity shop?
Yeah, I was kind of like surprised.
You got a bit salty online because someone said, I can't see there's anything wrong in that book. And then you just posted pictures of cocks and everything.
Yeah, Dan Butch was like, he did his sort of Mary Whitehouse experience. What's this?
It wasn't the fact that I just said that I was surprised that they put that up in the charity shop because, like, the content. And as the Bounce comic said, well, it's not that bad. And I was posted a couple of pictures, and it's like, it is that bad.
Yeah.
I'm not casting aspersions. Anyone who reads it, sells it, enjoys it, whatever. But it is that
grim.
Bad.
Yeah, it's pretty grim.
I like to think of the ladies in charity shops reading it and getting a bit of a knee trembler. Do you know what I mean?
Some old lady saw the handshake and, where do we put this? Since I was a comic. Yeah. Put it down for the kids.
You can never go back in that charity shop again, can you now? Because they know you're the pervert that you are.
I tell you what, it was the most expensive one out of the books I got. And I got them all for an absolute steal.
Right.
But it was the one that was a bit more in terms of pounds. You know. Do you think... I blame that on Alan Moore.
Yeah, obviously. Mm. Yeah. And Lovecraft, to be fair.
Yeah. There wasn't a massive sexual elements in Lovecraft's work, if I recall.
Right.
No, there's not. It's not so blatant, shall we say. Yeah. Neonomicon is... It has a reputation.
It's so, well-founded.
So, I'm looking forward to reading it.
Okay, well, it's bringing it back to the nice world. Does anyone know the Superman villain, Terror Man?
No.
He's I suppose is he Bronze Age, I suppose.
To be
thing?
Fair, I'm not that au fait with a lot of Superman villains.
Superman his lore. Yeah. He's a sort of cowboy in outer space. He flies around on a winged horse and is dressed like a cowboy. I've got a feeling there was some kind of sort of litigious element to the fact they drew him as Clint Eastwood at some point.
Yeah.
I've got a feeling there's something like that when he first appeared. Hmm. He has a six shooter that fires sort of tracer bullets, and he can controls space tumbleweeds, which attach themselves to Superman and leech off his powers. And he has a laser lasso. That's fucking cool, isn't it?
Yeah, that's pretty.
Yeah, maybe incorporate. You could incorporate him into the sheriff, couldn't you, Chris?
A laser lasso.
Laser lasso. Yeah, I like that.
I want the space tumbleweeds.
Yeah,
space tumbleweeds.
Yeah,
that's quite cool.
If they don't turn up somewhere, I'll be very disappointed in you, Chris.
What? No, I just have a whole episode of space tumbleweed.
What's the go-to kind of Western character in the Marvel Universe? I mean, like, Jonah Hex obviously is the one that jumps out for DC. But...
Yeah, there's a few, aren't there? I would say there's Two Gun Kid. There's Red Wolf.
Okay, yep.
And he comes backwards and forwards. There's a few sort of different incarnations of him. And Rawhide Kid as well. Kid Colt. Caleb Hammer, I think, is a sort of bit of a... He only appeared a few times. I think it was Marvel Spotlight or Marvel Premiere. Yeah. There's not a huge amount. No. There's obviously the section in the Avengers, which is kind of where I first met the Marvel Cowboys, was when Hawkeye went back in time and lived with them for a while.
Okay.
Oh, right.
Sort of an outlaw back then. That was quite a good little... I think Perez was drawing it back then. Quite a good little sort of section of the story. Quite cool.
Marvel's
a huge amount.
Yeah, Jonah Hex is obviously the first name you think of when you think of big two characters. Yeah. Don't you? Marvel don't really have that.
No, they don't. We remember there was a whole section in Crisis, wasn't there, which was the Western heroes.
Yeah.
In the DC universe, you saw El Diablo, didn't you? And Hawk and Jonah Hex. And there's a few different ones. You know, Cinnamon. Anyone knows her?
No.
I think they've got a bit of a deeper reach around the Western characters. I suppose because they had that sort of richer continuity, didn't they? Because it went back a bit further.
Yeah.
Before Marvel sort of restarted again.
Essentially, Marvel was founded on superheroes, wasn't it?
As we know it now. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
DC was kind of like a conglomerate of stuff coming together. Mm. And
yeah,
yeah.
I think you kind of got
Dark Tower published under Marvel.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think you kind of got to go to some of the other characters, the other companies for sort of Western characters. The ones who were sort of, I hate to say they were churning out issues, but they were a tiny bit. So you had Charlton. So they had Black Fury, who was a black cowboy. The Cheyenne Kid, Gunmaster, Billy the Kid. And then they had a comic about Tex Ritter, which is good because that became rhyming slang. And then you had a lot of Gold Key did a lot with the TV products, because in America, Cowboy, and to a certain extent over here, Cowboy TV series were big business, weren't they?
Yeah.
So you had we had Bonanza and the High Chaparral, didn't we?
Mm-hmm. And Rawhide.
And Rawhide, yeah. Mm-hmm. So there you had comics of those, but you also had Have Gun Will Travel. They did a Lone Ranger comic series. They did a Wild Wild West series before it became the Wiki Wiki Wild Wild West. when it was a TV series, they had that. And Dell Comics had Lone Ranger. They actually had a series about Lone Ranger's horse called Hyo Silver. Gene Autry comic, Roy Rogers comics. You know, there was a lot of the TV stuff, and the movie stars were getting their own comics back then. You know, same as you had Bing Crosby comics and stuff like that, didn't you? You know,
let's not forget the classic 80s cartoons. I think Dan and Chris will know these. Brave Star.
Yep.
Of course.
And Galaxy Rangers.
They were both comics, were they? Or
I think Brave Star certainly had, just tie-in, sort of just churning
Galaxy
out.
Galaxy Rangers had comic, but it was like the comic from the cartoon.
Yeah.
Think it the large UK press format size. I'm not sure if it ran in the States, but yeah.
I love Galaxy Rangers.
I really like that.
Yeah.
I was chatting to Simon Russell about this the other day, and he said Alex Toth Zorro, which is just class. Mm-hmm. And if you're an artist and you haven't sort of read anything by Alex Toth, and he's one of those sort of artists, you know, one of those guys, and there's some beautiful stuff.
I always really like the Zorro character. He was kind of like a Wild West superhero, but he was fighting from against oppression. It wasn't just like random
He's a bit more of a sort of swashbuckler cowboy, wasn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I really liked his stuff. Oh, I know the Dynamite put out some quite a good series a few years ago. And didn't they do a Django Zorro book?
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Matt Wagner wrote quite a lot of the Zorro stuff.
Yeah.
And I like his stuff. You know, I think he really loves it as a character.
And if I remember, yeah. I think Quentin Tarantino had something to do with the Django Zorro one.
Yes, he did. Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Was the one they had, I can't remember what company had Zorro. It was like in the 90s or 2000, and they did a spin off with Lady Rawhide as a character.
Oh, that was,
yeah. I think that was Dynamite. There was a bit of controversy over that, wasn't there?
What was the controversy?
Wasn't it one of these, she's sort of just a sexy Zorro type controversy?
Oh, probably. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, that those kind of clones were a dime a dozen at that point in time.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
I've got a friend and he does a sort of, we call him Zorro, but it's for a different reason.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
Yeah, I bet.
And that's the perfect time to introduce the poll, this week's poll. Now, we asked our lovely listeners and people on Twitter. I don't know if any of them actually listen to the show, but they certainly voted. We said, what kind of Western comics are you more likely to read? Now, we had four choices. The classic Wild West stuff. Modern stories and setting. With a twist. Sci-fi, supernatural, etc. Or you're just not interested in them. Now, what do you think came out on top?
I like to think classic.
Yeah, I would like to think that.
I'm going with the twist.
Okay.
I've got a feeling I'm going to go that people are not interested in them and stick my neck out.
Oh, yeah, I think you might be right, mate. Yeah, I think it's a good shout around that. Yeah.
Well, I can tell you that there was no fourth place. There's two. In joint third place with 14% is the modern stories and setting, or they're just not interested in them. So, in some ways, I was a bit saddened that some people were just not interested in stuff. I always like to think it's worth giving stuff a try. You know,
I think if you tell a story well, then it's worth looking at. You should be open to reading all things. I've just reread a load of in preparation for today. I read a load of Lone Ranger books by Dynamite, and I was so impressed about they're addressing. There's one which is basically addressing people smuggling, where they were bringing in Chinese women from China to act as prostitutes, and the Lone Ranger breaks up this sort of people smuggling ring. And I think, why is it, that should be appropriate for stories that we read about now? You know, it's it just depends on how you do it.
It's just falling in and out of favour, isn't it? Genres, and the West is maybe a little bit out of favour at the moment.
Yeah,
but I don't know.
Certainly, probably. I would hazard a guess to say that the UK audience isn't really a Western comics reader. Would you say that?
Maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe.
That's sticking my neck out. Oh, Christ.
The last big hit that everyone was talking about in the sort of comics community was, it's hard to say, but I'm going to say probably when the New 52 came in and they did that Jonah Hex series, which was based in cowboy era Gotham.
Gotham, yeah.
And that was really good, and there's a little bit of buzz around that, but I've not really heard any buzz around anything since, I'm going to say.
Yeah.
What about Redding did well for Dead Canary?
Oh, in terms of small press, like, Redding's a fantastic one. I think that's done well for them. Like, I've got a couple, like, I spoke about the books West. Have you seen those about?
I've got one
of that by Andrew Cheverton and Tim Keeble. I think it's the small little Wild West comics that they're purely Wild West sort of stories. Do you know what I mean? It's short stories, but there's no supernatural stuff. It's great little books. Andy Brawl put me onto them. It's all about a character called Jerusalem West, who basically travels America, and each little short story is people he's run into, and that's great sort of stuff. Time Bomb Comics have also put out The Last Ride of Henry Holden. That's another one I've got, which is purely that's another just a Wild West story. You know, classic Wild West story. So there are, and of course you've got the wonderful Last Sheriff giving you a bit of sci-fi as well. So there is stuff out there. You know,
as long as it's well done, people will read it.
Yeah, totally. And I know Accent UK, they had a Wild West anthology, if I remember correctly.
Is it Western Noir? That's not the one, is it?
I'm not sure. I can't remember now. I haven't actually got that one.
Right.
Yeah, so there is small press stuff about, and I think that, you know, certainly I love the Western genre, and, you know, we love Western films and stuff, don't we? So there's lots of people out there, but I don't know whether people are necessarily confident enough to write a Western story, you know.
I don't think the era of people, when I was a kid, it was always Westerns on a Sunday afternoon on telly and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it was a big thing, and you'd seen them all. You know, we all talked about you know, the Magnificent Seven, and even the sort of John Wayne films you'd see regularly on television, but you don't see them anymore, really.
No.
You know?
No. I mean, only like, it's usually like in the daytime on Film 4 or something, and they've got this old film.
Yeah.
But it is those sort of films. They're the ones that I'm more likely that if I just catch 5 minutes of, I'm hooked on them. You know, I sit down and you just sort of watch it because it's just good watching. They're so easy and sort of absorbing to watch those old classic Westerns, I find.
We talked last week about noir having rules, and I think certainly Westerns do have a certain number of rules that, you know, are almost you have to include. Like, if there's a preacher in a Western, generally he has to be a fucking toothless villain, doesn't he?
Yeah,
you know, and if there's someone selling stuff from a travelling show,
it's
a, you know, it's a rip-off. And
if he's a preacher, he's a nice preacher that will just get either killed or just completely trampled on by whatever bad guy comes into that town.
And there's always the innocent woman who owns the company stroke box of gold stroke ranch somewhere, you know, who the hero will fall in love with. There's these little things, aren't there, you know?
Yeah.
But you go back and look at the films like Sergio Leone and the framing and the composition, the setup of shots, and it's like they're absolutely fantastic, and it seems like comics the right medium to kind of recreate that stuff.
I mean, hopefully you guys have looked at some of that those Blueberry pages, and they're exactly like that. You know, the sort of scope of the sort of riding across, you know, just beautiful stuff. You know,
so I think that's one of the things about Westerns is kind of the big landscapes and
stuff like Red River and
country and kind of like.
Yeah.
Like when they're going into like small towns, it's like this is an isolated community, and any problems here are very much kind of here because there's fuck all out there.
Yeah.
And it's very lawless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's good.
Does that, for an artist, for example, get a little bit monotonous? One of the reasons why people do steer away from it as a whole, though, because actually what you're getting is a lot of space kind of combined with just very small towns that all look very similar, so actually your kind of like your framework that you've got there actually isn't an awful lot to play with and give like variation and things like that as far as like kind of like world building and things like that.
You could say that, but I think there's more than enough to play with. You know, I think if you've got confidence and if you tell your story right, I mean, back to the Sixth Gun, none of that seems samey. Do you know what I mean? They're travelling the Wild West, and you know, settings and you know, towns and everything. Everything's individual. So you know, if you're taking the easy way out and doing the same thing all the time, then I think probably the Western genre will seem a little bland to you.
Mm. But I mean, to me, it's comparable to something like Conan, where you can have Jonah Hex in the desert, or he can be in Chicago in the city, or he can be in you know, the snowy wastes, or he can get on a boat and come to England, which he has done. You know, I think it's the imagination. I think you're right, though, to a certain extent, Chris. Well, I think people think it limits their imagination, you know, where it probably shouldn't, you know.
Yeah, I just don't think when you come at it from an artist, from a reader's point of view, probably you're going in thinking you know exactly what the sort of setting is going to be.
How does an artist put their spin on that sort of thing?
Yeah,
because it does have such a specific kind of look to it. You know, the reader. In a subconscious way, I think when they pick up some sort of Western book, the reader has a subconscious expectation of how things should look. Like Tony was saying, like the rules. Like there's almost like a visual rule, you know, how you want your Western books to be. For instance, if you were telling like a real life story and then you had some sort of crazy coloured character, you go be like, what the hell is this? Do you know what I mean? And that'll take you out of the story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back to the poll, though.
Okay.
Right. The tangents on this show always wonderful. In second place with 26% was the classic Wild West stuff. So with 45%, people like their Westerns with a twist, which is, I would say, that is what most of them are these days. I mean, I think
if you read a Western, they always have been. There's always an element of the one-off Western tale that has a little Twilight Zone twist at the end of it.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you go far enough back, I think they've you read anything by Jonah Hex, it's always like got that sort of little twist that makes it a morality tale or something like that as well, you know.
But I think definitely, you know, westerns also, they always skirt with the supernatural, don't they? Or, you know, people will take them into the far future, like the Reckless Hero guys are doing. You know, that's a good way to put a fresh perspective on it.
Yeah, I think you've had that. Has anyone seen the movie Grim Prairie Tales?
No, I've not seen that one.
That's a sort of early horror western-y type thing. But yeah, I think you've also got the sort of mysticism of the indigenous people, haven't you? Because that's something that's an element that's introduced quite a lot, I think.
Yeah. And yeah, certainly stuff like that.
Something we're trying to touch on is that element of the native people to the lands, and I think that's a new element to the story, definitely. Yeah.
But that's also the element that you do have to sort of research and be respectful of, and you know, and
God, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You know.
I was put right about because you know we, as kids we probably called them Red Indians, didn't we, which is obviously not right. And then Native American became, and I was put right by someone who said, well, you can't call them Native Americans because it was never America.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
So good point.
And I kind of get that, I think, you know, because as we talked about last week, Scalped is a western, you know, to a certain extent, isn't it, you know?
Yeah,
it's an interesting one.
God, there's so many things to think about. But there is with every genre, isn't there, really? There's so many layers and so many things you can do with it. I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing if there are any, you know, if there's any of you guys out there who are maybe planning to do a Western comic. It's probably one of the genres that I haven't thought about doing something in, which is strange. No.
You've got to be confident drawing horses.
Actually, let's just put the record straight. That's what's putting a lot of artists off, drawing horses.
I had a dog character pop up in Vanguard, and then I thought, I'm just writing this out. I'm not going to have this character having a dog.
What happened to the dog, Dan?
This disappeared off the script.
Oh, right. Good. not gonna come
there was going. A dog that got killed, and I quite like dogs, but you know, I thought, I can't be drawing a dog. It doesn't look very good.
Yeah.
And pulls people out of it. So.
And now he's got his friendly penguin with him.
Yeah. Oh, he's got his friendly speed cock with him.
Oh.
Stick insect. Just a couple of lights.
Oh my word. Yeah. So I think that's it for the Western genre, isn't it? I think we've given that a good bash. What I love about what's been fun about doing these genre shows is even going into ones that I don't feel confident talking about. You know, it shows the strength of genres, doesn't it? That as soon as you get dialogue started, everyone's got an opinion about them in some ways. You know,
yeah.
I mean, certainly
opinions as well.
Yeah,
listening to other people's.
Yeah, I mean, out of the weeks that we've been doing these, which one do you think you were least confident in doing?
What were they again?
Robots.
We
had giant monsters, giant robots, martial arts, crime. And now westerns.
I think for me it was giant robots because I'm of the generation before Transformers, so it wasn't really a comfort zone for me. I have to say I was a bit unsure about westerns, and then I thought I'll do a bit of research, and I thought, fucking hell, I loved all these comics, and I've got a list of another 20 I could read you out. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of just there's sort of some really rich comics. They're sort of so well written, I think, historically. I think the Western was better written than the superhero comic back in the day. At the same time, I think the superhero comic has almost overtaken the quality of writing in some Western comics, but back then it was a real art to write in a Western. You could see people were really invested in it, you know?
Yeah.
I was really surprised when I was researching, it was I was trying to list the comics, and there was hardly none there. So I was thinking, I'm not, as a whole, it's not I wouldn't like particularly read classic kind of like Western tales. I'd have to have some sort of twist for me. But then I was kind of like thinking about some of the films and TV that I like, and that list was massive. So I do actually love kind of Western. One of the things when I was thinking about it, I was thinking, I do need to read more kind of more Western comics, because as a genre as a whole, it is one that I really enjoy. So I've already had a list, and Tony's had doubled the size of that with your recommendation. So
I'd recommend Blueberry and Hex, I think, were the two. But just if I can just get one last one in, Vince,
go for it.
And that's The White Indian by Frank Frazetta.
Okay.
It's incredible art. I mean, Frazetta, I think it's Frazetta's longest sequential comic.
Really?
And it's about a sort of backwoodsman, sort of Native American fighting guy from 49. But it's just been released, I think, again in hardback. Just, I think it was described by the, I think the New York Times described it as gloriously inappropriate. So immediately I want to read it, you know. But Frazetta is an absolute fucking master.
Oh, and God. It's just gorgeous absolute looking. Beast. Yeah. Just an absolute beast.
Yeah, if you can get out. I know they've got them in Orbital. I was looking at them the other day. Yeah, gorgeous stuff. Yeah,
nice. Nice one.
So, yeah, plenty. Hopefully, you lot out there will listen and check out some of these books, because there's some cracking ones out there. Like any genre book, if it, you know, even if you think you don't like them, give them a go, because when they're done well, they're done really well, like supremely well. So, and also because these shows, I've got a massive list because I've been listening to everyone that's on here, like just reel off stuff that I know nothing about.
I was saying, I'm actually working on a Western comic at the moment. I didn't really realize it's that El Marvo is a Western comic. It's like a Western comic set in the apocalypse.
We didn't even touch much on the post-apocalyptic Western. I know The Last Sheriff has that sort of post-apocalyptic feel to it. Mm. But I know that's probably the style of Western that a lot of people would do these days. Certainly with things off the top of my head. Is it Wasteland? That book, Wasteland?
Okay.
Do you know the one I'm talking about?
I mean, there's a big argument to say that there's huge Western tropes in The Walking Dead, aren't there?
Mm. Yeah.
You know?
You're right. Oh, Sheriff.
Yeah. Witchfinder, which is one of the spin-off Hellboy books, is about. There's a couple of arcs of that set in the Wild West.
I really want to read that series, actually.
Really good, yeah. And it's drawn by Severin. One of the series is drawn by John Severin. It, beautiful. I think it was his last project before he passed away. Amazing stuff.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. It's strange how many of the post-apocalyptic stuff do go straight onto kind of Western tropes. Like I was watching bits of the Book of Eli, and that's a Western.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of kind of like even the Fist and the North Star comic we talked about a couple of weeks ago. That's essentially a Western. There's a lone fighter going around like the lawless lands.
Yeah. When you think that a lot of Westerns came from samurai movies, you know, Magnificent Seven, you know, the Clint Eastwood spaghetti Westerns came from Yojimbo and stuff like that, didn't they? You know, there's got to be loads of parallels in manga and anime that we've missed here. I've got to.
Yeah.
Oh, God, dear God. And no doubt there'll probably be a lot of people maybe making a comment on the Facebook.
Yeah. I think we're going to put a post on the chat room page, aren't we?
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
I think there was a suggestion, which is a good one last week, of having... after each episode we put a thing on so that everyone else can say what wankers we are. More than just me probably this week, so that'd be right.
Well, well, whenever I post it on all of the Facebook pages and stuff, I do say put your comments below.
Yeah, we get loads of comments on there. I have to say, because you now got to apply to join the page, I think I might have caught a crafty cosplayer trying to get in. Oh, so we're watching you.
And we do, I have noticed on the Facebook page, we have had a lot of people sort of on their posts sort of saying, is it okay to post this? just post your stuff and we'll no doubt decide. Approve it.
You don't need to write that in there. Yeah.
You don't have to apologise. Yeah. Just it'll be fine.
I was lamenting on Twitter saying sometimes there's bots.
Yeah.
Very, very hard to spot.
Yeah.
I think
Do you love a bot, Dan? Do you love a bot?
Oh, God, the robots have come up.
Oh, I didn't mean to boss them.
I've not seen any of those bottom ones. Please send
We've had one. A particularly funny one that we were reading this week.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, what was that guy like?
Fucking hell, yeah.
That was scary.
He's a bit of a one.
Yeah.
Don't, because he
might be listening.
He's on the show now. Oh, not really, Chris. He's not really yet.
No. I never write anything on there.
Boom.
Chris is not on the grid, people, so don't even bother. Do we have any shout outs, gents, this week?
Yeah, I've got a few. Should we start with just saying it's a shame, but Leo Baxendale passed away this week.
Yeah.
Who is the creator of so many strips. He wrote for he created characters for the Beano, the Dandy, Beezer, Wham, Smash, creator of Minnie the Minx, creator of the Bash Street Kids, so we all know characters he's created. It's not necessarily ones that we talk a lot about on the show.
No.
I think we were quite pleased at Down the Tubes because the BBC did an article and they linked to one of John's and Richard Chief's article on him. So we were quite pleased about it. And it's certainly the place for Down the Tubes posts a lot of stuff about classic British weekly creators. A real shame. A real everyone was really fond of his work, you know, and of him. And I think a real shame that he passed away. Although he was in his 80s, you know.
Yeah.
Fair enough, yeah.
But he's left a good body of work behind, certainly.
Yeah, definitely. A couple more. I've got to mention Nick Prolix, who is currently, me and him are working on something which you will hopefully see the light of day very soon. If you look on both our Twitters, you'll see some of the process that he's doing around the character, and it's beautiful looking. If you go to nickprolix.bigcartel.com, you can buy his book, The Sheep and the Wolves, which is great. We're all big fans of his work on here. Follow him on Twitter as well, The Sheep and the Wolves, and there's some amazing sort of work he puts up. He's a real class act. I think you'll agree, guys, with you?
Yeah, oh God, yeah. Yeah.
And the other one is to Simon Russell, who has very kindly got me into the exhibition, the Inking Woman party this week. He's got a comic pop-up, which is the 13th of May between 12 and 5, and it's the Hanover Pub at 242 Queens Road, Brighton, BN29ZB. And it's basically a little comics event amongst an art sort of event that they have in Brighton around that time. If you send him your comics, he will sell them with zero commission. And I can tell you that is true, because when I sat in the pub with him, he had the biggest rucksack in the world, which he was carrying around full of comics people are giving to sell at this event. So he's doing it all off his own back, and I think it's well worth your support. So if you are in the South, anywhere near Brighton, pop along to that. Very good. There you go. That's it for me.
Nice one.
Nice. Dan, do you have any?
No, I've got no shout-outs whatsoever. I probably do. I remember everything.
I always do
recording
after the show, yeah. Just give another shout-out to my mates in the Hellbound Media, who have a Kickstarter for their Giallo book up at the moment. Already a success, but if you... Shock value Giallo. Is it Giallo? Am I saying it right?
I don't know. I had this discussion this week as well.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But if you like that sort of Italian horror thriller type stuff, they're doing a special anthology all based around it, and they're great guys. They do a sensible Kickstarter. They don't really mess around, so check that if you can. And just a quick shout out to my bro Daniel Mark Chan, who I went to see Guardians of the Galaxy with on Friday, and which
we're not talking about it.
But me and him are working on some stuff that's going to be out in the near future. So, yeah, just thought I'd give a shout out, because it's nice catching up with him. So there you go. Chris, do you have any shout outs while you're here, my friend?
No, I don't think so at the moment.
Ah, oh, splendid. No. We like it when the guests don't.
Yeah, fuck Imber.
he's got a big enough head already.
Yeah, yeah, true. Oh, God, does he listen?
Hasn't sent me any guitar videos recently. A bit disappointed.
Just well, we're sitting there strumming it.
Yeah. Or maybe it's a banjo. I don't know, I heard it break.
He did
do some great sketches, so if you go over to our Facebook or to Chris's Twitter, you'll see all the stuff he's done at MCOM, which is very good, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, there were superb sketches this weekend,
and
as always.
They're also available, aren't they? Are they available for
I think we've got about one of them left. I think the Judge Dredd one's still available. Yeah, recklessera.com. I think they're up on there. But the Judge Dredd one, I think, is one of my favourites. And if it wasn't such a cheap bastard, I'd probably buy it off him.
Well, you know him, so there's no strings attached. You don't feel pressured into it, Chris. Come on. Anyway, comics. Let's shut this pony down and let people know about some great books to check out. Who wants to go first?
Not me. Well, you go first. I'm not quite ready with mine yet.
You're not quite ready. What? You haven't finished reading it? Are you reading it?
I'm trying to find it in my notebook. And you go first. Go on.
Okay. Well, my one this week is another Comixology purchase that I got recently, and it's another one from Europe Comics, which, as I've spoken about before, they did The Amazing Swordmaster. Well, they published The Amazing Swordmaster, should I say. And what this company do, they translate some of these fantastic books that you get on the continent, and they put them up available digitally for you to check out. I got Swordmaster from them, and then I checked out a book called Isabelle, which I probably said that wrong. And I got Volume 1, The Nightman, Now, the synopsis of this is, it's Japan, 1192, 7 years since the Battle of Dannonora. I can't say that right, but it just had Dan in the title, so that was all I cared
about.
That's
why you bought it.
Yeah, that's totally why I bought it. But that marked the beginning of the feudal era. It's also been 7 years since Isabelle Ashiwara started roaming the country, accompanied by her father's ghost, earning a living by the point of her sword, and 7 years that she's been looking for her long-lost sister, Shuko. The time has at last come for this bounty hunter to face up to her past and take charge of her destiny. Yep, it's a book about, like, samurais and all of that kind of stuff. I believe it's a Spanish book. Now, if I look at the people who did it, it was... The writer is Raul, and the artist and colourist is Gabor. So, you know.
Just one word each.
Just one word each.
Like Topple. Okay.
Yeah, like Tybor.
Tybor.
Yeah. this was one of those, again, you know, because of the confidence I had from the last purchase I got, I thought I'd take a punt. It was on, I think it was on sale, Comixology. They were like £2 each at the moment. They're £5 each. Currently online digitally, and I picked up the first three volumes. I'm just going to start off with The Nightman because it's another absolute corker. It's an absolutely beautiful book. There's just rich, lush artwork. It's a truly character-led story about this character, Isabelle, who is literally, she's talking to the father of a ghost wandering through this Japanese land, but she's on the run from her past, as they all are. Everyone is, isn't they? And comes across bandits.
I can't think about my past, it's too painful.
Dan Butcher doesn't have one, do you, Dan?
Like, no, Joe, past.
You're our very own Jason Bourne.
What's that movie about the bloke who keeps forgetting things, who's got a load of Polaroids with things written on?
Memento.
Memento, yeah. You're a bit like that, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, about the Polaroids.
He's just got get milk written all over him.
Yeah. Don't touch yourself.
Which is unfortunately written on his cock. No.
Got that tattoo I've got on my cock.
Oh, damn it.
I told you about that, haven't I?
What? Go on, Tony.
I've got a tattoo of a huge cock on my cock.
A tattoo of one.
Yeah.
So when you say to young or ladies, not young ladies, so you want to see my huge cock, he's showing the tattoo.
It's just underneath his tattoo of a huge cock.
Oh, dear God. It's so many dad jokes just pouring out of Tony Esmond. Yes, away from cocks and back to good comics. I highly suggest you pick this up. I mean... The front cover's got Dan Butcher written all over it, and it's the main character sitting up on top of a pile of dead bodies with blood and swords everywhere.
What's the name of the company? Is that a phone app, or is that how do you buy them?
I got them on Comixology. Yeah, it is. They're a sort of digital sort of publisher, Europe Comics. Yeah. If you look, I'm sure if you Google it, fairly recent, because I know there's a couple of companies that obviously publish translated European books, like go on, Tony, off the top of your head.
Isneo, what's the one that, the Cinebook. British one, they do Cinebus. Yeah, they're basically Cinebook, I think, is the published arm of Isneo, if you see what I mean.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so Cinebook does the hard copy and Isneo does the digital copy.
Yeah. Is it Humanoids is another one?
Humanoids another one, yeah. Your Humanoids UK is run by Tim Pilcher, who's currently doing a book with Dave Gibbons, I think you find.
Nice. Yeah, Europe Comics. If you go to europecomics.com, you'll see their catalogue and creators and characters, and there's all kinds of great stuff there. I mean, the ones
Go on. I was going to say, the reason I stopped buying stuff off Comixology, but the reason I like Isneo is you can buy an app.
The thing is, I've got a Samsung
Galaxy. You're on a Kindle, aren't you?
Yeah, a Kindle or the app on my my phone, which is just a Samsung Galaxy, and I can and because I've got an Amazon account, I can buy an app and stuff. So,
yeah, see, I much prefer that.
Yeah,
yeah.
So that's why whenever I talk about Comixology, is because it's an easy way.
I
find it fucking bewildering on the iPhone.
Is it really?
It's just like just it should make it so much simpler.
I know Susan Gander asked about it, didn't she, this week? And it's a valid question because it is fucking confusing. Yeah. It's put me right off buying digital comics, I've got to tell you.
Yeah. And that's the strange thing because, like, you know, for me, it's just a couple of taps and I've got these books. But, you know, and then I hear stuff like that and I'm like, oh, God, you know, I don't understand why it's so hard for people, for a company like that to make it easy for everyone.
You know, I've got an iPad and I've got to go to their website through the browser, buy the book, and then wait for it to sync on the Comixology app. Yeah. It's a pain in the arse.
See, that's just, that's just not right.
Been involved, well, been keeping me to the ground in regards to the Comic House that they're developing an app.
Yeah.
And that might be the perfect platform for small press creators like ourselves to get our work on
it. Yeah, definitely.
Like, downloadable digital reader.
Yeah, it's like a Spotify kind of for comics, isn't it? Is that the plan?
Yeah, so you pay a fee and then you can kind of read the comics as and when you like.
Okay.
So that might be a nice option.
Mm. Mm. I think we definitely need to have a digital comics episode at some point in the future just to try and clear the wheat from the chaff and see which is, you know, what are the good options, you know, what are the tips to it, because, you know, I don't know where to begin.
No. Yeah,
like I just said, someone like Alex Thomas on from Pipe Dream. He's always very good.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, they're all about digital comics anyway, aren't they? The Pipe Dream boys. Yeah. So Isabelle, if you go to Europe Comics and you'll see it there, and there's like examples of the pages and stuff. It's just fantastic comics, beautiful stuff. I've quite enjoyed posting a few sort of snapshots of the books that I've talked about on the Awesome Comics Talk page, and I think it's been quite nice to see people's reaction to books that you like and recommend. I know certainly Plastic last week got a lot of people talking.
Yeah, I bought that. It was good, that was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a cracking book.
Yeah. I think I'm going to save it for the trade because I think it'll make a good trade read as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But great first issue, yeah. Yeah.
And I think certainly with books like this, Isabelle, it's hard to totally describe the story without putting too many spoilers. Like there's, you know, there's twists and turns and characters, you know, aren't what they seem, etc. But just to see the pages for yourself, that'll sell you on it. That'll totally sell you on it. So, expect me to post something up in the next couple of days. So, that's my one. Anyway, who's next?
I'll go next.
Yeah, you're next.
Yeah. The book I'm going to recommend, or books, is the Dark Tower graphic novels. The first one being Gunslinger Born, and then you've got The Long Road Home and Treachery. If you've ever read the books, have you guys read the Dark Tower books?
No, I haven't done. I would like to. Yeah,
yeah. I started to, but they were a bit too, heavy for me. You know what I mean? They're quite hard to get into. Whereas,
okay,
the books you're talking about were a lot easier for me. But carry on.
Yeah, they're kind of the comic, well, these first three books all kind of focus pretty much on events that happened before the books, and you kind of get callbacks from what happens in the book to certain events, and these kind of like pull those scenes open a bit more. It'd been very hard, I think, at least, to kind of do more material within like what happens in the books. They're really good comics. Like, I think this is, the books are almost unadaptable for a lot of mediums. This one does it well. The artwork by Jay Lee is really nice, fantastic stuff. And the kind of the writing by Peter David and the young lady Robin Firth.
Yeah.
They take King's work and they understand what they're doing and they really flesh out more of the universe.
I think it's Jay Lee's best work for me personally.
Yeah.
That he's ever done.
To be fair, I kind of, in the early days, wasn't a big fan of Jay Lee. I just kind of...
Me neither.
He was trying so hard to be real edgy and harsh, and it just seemed just a bit ugly for me. I didn't like it.
Very angular, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Very angular and sort of sketchy. Yeah.
Got so much better as he's worked on to a style now, which I really appreciate. And the great thing about these trades is they're full of background material of him when he's working his stuff up, and you can look at the process and think, oh, this is really great. It's he really knows his stuff and picking up tips from that. But it's hard. I don't really want to kind of go too much into the Dark Tower story because it's really epic. But essentially, like, Roland, the main character, is the last of a kind of the gunslingers, which are like knights but essentially cowboys, and they live like in what is like a Western world, but the world they're living in is all fall into ruin. There's some kind of element that's kind of not right with it, and it's all going south. And where the books go on from is when Roland, kind of the last of his kind, sets off to the Dark Tower, which is essentially a construct at the middle of all realities and worlds, and it's starting to kind of fall. And if it goes down, that would be the end of existence everywhere. So he goes on a kind of quest to get to the tower and see what's kind of going on. And there's the books are fantastic because they cross over to other bits of King's work. There's the first book is essentially a lot of setup. Once you get into the second book, it really gets cracking. There's something that happens in the beginning of the second book that absolutely shocked me when I first read it. It's like, wow, you've done that to your character. And sometimes when you read fiction and imagine like you read the second book of Conan and like he gets an arm or a leg chopped off and you're like, bloody hell, that's really harsh on the character. You kind of, they're so great at something, you kind of mucked it up. But the comics are great. Like they can be read alone or as a companion to kind of the books. So track them down. I've got the first one. I borrowed two more from my friend at work.
Was there a big gap between the first book coming out and the second one? I've got a feeling there was a bit of a gap, wasn't there?
With the trade? I think there was. I've got the first...
I mean, the original novels sort of thing. So I was just wondering...
original novels. The first one came out... He was taking his time. He was doing a bit with George R.R. Martin.
Right.
The first four or five came out. The first four came out, and then there was a gap. Then the fifth one came out, and then he basically just... There was a 20-year gap between the fourth and the fifth, I think.
Oh, right, that's what I'm thinking of.
And then he just started punching them out year after year. If I'm honest, okay. After the fifth one, I'm not a massive fan.
Right.
I'm not sure about it. When Stephen King was out of his nut on booze and drugs, he seemed to be just destroying it. Sobered up, it kind of...
Yeah.
That's a lesson for us all.
Because the Dark Tower series, it messes with the different sort of levels of reality, like characters from his previous stories turn up, don't they?
Yeah, there's a couple of protagonists. One, Randall Flagg, RF.
Mm.
He kind of pops up in a couple of Stephen King's stories.
Mm. He's the bad guy in The Stand, if I remember correctly.
That's correct, yeah. Mm. And he's in Eyes of the Dragon, I think, and a couple of others. He pops up as the antagonist. And it's great to see like a character that's so bad crossing over into the various works. So there's a real weight to him. So
Dan, what's your thoughts on the colouring in I've got the Gunslinger Born, and I just came across it, I thought the artwork would be kind of like complemented a bit more by a grittier kind of like colouring style. And they used a very kind of like airbrushy style. I didn't know what sort of like take was on that as a fellow
colourist. Who's the colourist on it?
I think Jake Lee might do it as well, to be honest.
Okay.
To be honest, kind of for me, the books are the thing, and I'm kind of not too fussed about the extra material. Like the film, I've really got no interest in, but if people want to go, that's fine. Same with the books. I found it's not the way it's really been done. I like what it is, but I wouldn't have made the same choices. I think I would have made it a bit more kind of traditional Western, but if that's the way he's doing it, that's fair enough. I'll just kind of accept it for what it is. But yeah, it's not the kind of the colour choices I would have made because they're quite vibrant, can you say? Where in the story that essentially everything's going to pot and becoming colourless in a way, that he's made some interesting choices. But yeah, you know, can't hate on it.
It's a series worth checking out, isn't it?
Definitely.
Tony, what about you?
I'm going to go with The Human Beings. Don't worry, I know there's a lot of our listeners have bought it, so this isn't going to be spoilerific at all. There's a non-spoiler review up on my blog that I put up yesterday. I'm quite pleased with how I managed to express what is translated in the book, because it's all of Stuart McCune's work, who's been on the show, is challenging, but it's challenging in a way that I'm very fond of, and I find it certainly intellectually enriching. You know, I think one of the lines I use in the review is, you know, there's a lot of drivel out there. There's a lot of comics drivel. We all know that across, you know, the small press and across the big companies. And when someone walks in with such a sort of individual voice, it's almost like an adult's walked into the room and told the kids to be quiet. That's a little bit how I feel about it. It's an anthology series. I think he's about to kickstart the second issue. Well, this month, as you listen to this episode, in May. And it's a series of stories about different places and about different people, but about the human condition, I suppose. And it, as in the title, there's one which I'm particularly fond of, which is a conversation between a man and a woman. And I don't think anyone I've seen recently has written something with such meaning, but with so few words. A lot of it is done with looks and tilts of heads and looks aways and pauses. And he does it with, it's funny. Funny you mentioned Giallo, Vince, because I mention it in the review. There's that sort of sense, that sort of otherworldly. You know, you watch a giallo, you know, or a spaghetti western or something like that. It's just unusual, isn't it? It's not something we're used to. It takes us out of our sort of Hollywood, UK film industry sort of comfort zone, and it puts us in a place where perhaps things are thought of differently, and stories are told in different ways, certain things are given more emphasis, and certain things are sort of slightly more bold and slightly more stark, and that's how I feel about this. He definitely kicks you out of your comfort zone with it. I feel like his I think this is his best written book as well. I think the art is consistently good, and he uses some real stylistic choices in it in this one. Just gobsmackingly unusual at points, but I think this is his best from a dialogue point of view so far. I can never predict what's going to happen in any of the stories, and I'm in the position now where I've read quite a lot of his stuff, and I don't want to predict. I want to see what happens. And I find it quite mesmerising to watch where he goes with each thing. It's a series. Some of them are just straightforward one-page stories. Some of them, you know, are up to 7 pages long. It's a real quality product. Get on it now. Get on to Stuart's work straight away, and especially get onto the human beings. He's also the master of the Kickstarter. So this Kickstarter seems like it's only just finished to me. And the book's already. I'm seeing postings all over the place from people saying they've got the book. I think, to be fair, Sarah Harris is reading hers in the toilet as we speak. I see her posting. yeah, so she'll hate me for that. So pick it up. Go to MillicentBarnesComics.BigCartel.com or follow Stu on at Stuart McCune, MCCUNE. I know I crack on about Stuart's work every time something comes out, but because to me it's intelligent writing, and I want to see this intelligence translated onto a comic page. And I really, really look forward to every one of his. I almost impatiently look forward to his books coming out. You know, there you go. That's my one.
Nice. Chris, sign us off. What have you got?
mine is. I'm miles behind with reading, but I'm on low at the moment. I don't know if you guys have read.
Yeah.
I've really enjoying it.
Chance to check that out yet.
Yeah, it's really, really, really well done. I think I was drawn in by the fact it was Rick Remender, kind of really, really enjoy always reading his stuff. But the artwork in it is just, I absolutely love it. It's Greg Tacchini, I think that's how you say it.
Yeah.
But it's the colours as well by Dave McCaig are just phenomenal. It's kind of love it. Just the whole world building they do in it is amazing, and just some of the colour choice when you're on looking at some colours, just thinking I would never have made that choice, but it works so well. I just sit and look in awe, and then actually read it, and it's just as good to read as to sort of stand and stare at. So I do love that. But it's basically the world is the sun has kind of expanded and irradiated the earth, so there's a whole everyone lives on under the ocean now. But it's kind of he's forward to, I think he said he wrote it when he was under kind of a sort of severe depression and stuff like that, and it's basically a tale about kind of keeping up hope and trying to get back to the surface and things like that. So I won't kind of like sort of like spoil it where it goes, but I think we're up to volume 3 at the moment, and if you follow people like Dave McCaig and Greg Tacchini on their sort of Twitter and Instagram, the stuff they're posting for the next kind of issues and stuff looks really really good as well. So
Greg Cicchini, the artist, was like, they had the longest queue at NICE last year, just people like waiting for hours on end to get a sketch, because I think he was doing really sort of beautiful sketches inside books and stuff like that, you know.
He's
exceptionally well thought of, I think, as an artist.
Nice. I need to put this to the top of my wish list again. I've been meaning to get this for a while, actually. There you go. So
nice one.
Yeah, that's a very good choice. That's one that hasn't been mentioned yet. It's one of those image ones that doesn't always get talked about too much, does it? I don't think. But the people that read it love it.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And just like the listeners of this show, did you love this show? There's several different ways you can let us know. How's that for a segue?
That's when we're going to get our space tumbleweed.
Yeah. Pretty irradiated already.
Anyway, you can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com if you've got anything you want to mention to us. Is there anything we got wrong, etc.? Likewise, the Awesome Pod Jam piece is still alive and kicking. So if you've got any small press heroes of yours that have a comic and you want to see them in a collective with lots of other awesome characters, then email your stuff to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com, because we're putting stuff together for a print that's going to be at LSCC.
Yep.
So, and it's looking sexy. Yep. So that's all I'm going to say. And on the social medias that we've talked about, you can follow us at The Awesome Pod, where we post up polls and we talk about who's going to be on the next show, etc., etc. Got some exciting guests lined up that I'm going to talk to the boys about after we finish. like us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And please, 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 if you're not a bot and you actually exist and you want to talk about comics with people that love comics and create comics, then join the Awesome Comics Talk group page on Facebook. It's amazing. It's one of the best communities out there, if you ask me, already.
Very supportive, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Good eggs. That's all I'm going to say. Yeah. Easter's long gone, but there's loads of good eggs on that Facebook page. It's been a long night. I think it's time to sign off. Thank you very much for listening to us, whether it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes or on Stitcher or the Podnose Network, wherever you heard us, if you've got a chance to leave us a nice review, please do. Helps get the word out. And we just want to be loved, all of us. Just loved. And why have you all gone quiet? where can people find us online, etc.? Mr. Esmond.
I'm at. Before anyone writes in and goes, where did you go for the start of the show? I was on the phone. So apologies if I wasn't on the first 15 minutes. Everyone will go. Occasionally people go, oh, you were quiet. What's the matter? I'll say, well, I'm sorry, I was on the phone. But yeah, just let's get out of the way. Neverironanything.blogspot.com. The review's gone up for the book I reviewed today. And also, please go over to the, not that we should plug other podcasts, but go over to the 2000 AD podcast this week, because they put the panel up that I did with Pat Mills, the interview I did with Pat Mills. And if you just listen quite carefully, you'll hear my Pat's reference to furries and the little tiny pause where I point at Vince in the audience.
Yeah.
It cheered me up.
That was a highlight. Brilliant.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Right.
There you go.
Highlight and a day of highlights.
That's very true. And the highlight of every show is you, Dan. So where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at VanguardComic.com.
Dan, it's almost like you're not used to me being nice to you. What's...
You got me off balance here. Well done.
Thank you, sir. Finally, I get one over on him. He's in the lead, but I'll catch up. You can find me on Twitter at Jester Diablo. You can find out more about my comic at theredmaskfrommars.com. And the wonderful Mr. Chris Jenkins, thank you for joining us this evening. Where can people find you?
Thanks very much for having me. I'm at The Mighty Burbs on most channels, although I'm not very active because I don't really like people.
So. Good man. Fill a kinship with you.
But yeah, if you haven't mentioned it enough already, we get anything we do is all on reckless hero.com. And I think I've just posted on YouTube channel a kind of video on flatting for colorists in a bit of a quicker way. I'm going to be trying to do a few more bits and bobs around kind of like coloring, and I think we're going to try and get Chris to do a few more bits around kind of drawing and kind of sort of illustration and kind of like Copic Marker coloring and things like that, just to be a bit more active on YouTube. So
I've
keep checking that out.
Saved that because I really looks interesting. I was going to watch it during the week, and that's the kind of content that would be absolutely perfect for the Facebook page.
Okay, yeah, definitely. No worries. I'll try and get my ass and post something on Facebook.
Yeah. Splendid.
Cool.
We give you so much on this show, and now we're going to leave you to miss us for a week.
Yeah.
So there you go, folks. Hope you enjoyed this week's show. Have a brilliant week. Read loads of comics. Stay tuned for what's coming up next week, because I'm not sure yet. But as always, stay awesome. See ya.
See ya.
Bye.
I think you became a pro a few years ago, didn't you, Vince?
Hey?
Yeah.
Different kind of pro, though, wasn't it, really?
He's got lots of work off the back of that.
Yeah, on his back.
On his back.
you're both so funny, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah, that was the Vince is a prostitute joke. Good.
So this is the way it goes, and we talk seriously for about sort of like 10 minutes, and then everyone just has a go at Vince for the rest of the
game. Yeah.
Now I'm not. Now I'm back.
Splendid.
Yeah. Well, it's a problem, though, isn't it? Because that just means that Vince has got more time to edit it, so anything nasty we do say is going to take out.
Yeah. So. He takes out all of our funny bits and adds his own funny bits in.
Yeah. I don't do any funny bits.
He takes the joke and re-says it.
Now that thing Dan said, I'm going to make it like I said it. Yeah. So the audio level's a bit up and down sometimes, but it works right, we think.
Yeah. That explains where all that laughter comes from in the background.
Yeah. That's his girlfriend. He makes her laugh.
Fucking,
laugh now.
Fucking arsehole.
One thing, before the Guardians of the Galaxy film, they did like the Wonder Woman trailer.